Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends, wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who was also once known as General Booty, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I can't tell you how much I laughed at this. and then I had the existential threat of, how deep do I go? How many nuggets do I save for the Texas pregame? Or how deep do I go on the secretary of the posterior, the commander in cheeks? Yeah, of course, the rear admiral, Herr Heine. I don't know. Like, basically, his name, though, is also about redistribution of pirate wealth, right? He's stealing from the 1% of pirates, so there's some Bernie Sanders jokes. I don't know. Anyways, not just the collective General Booty. Anyways, Gerald, what do you think of the new tookus behind center at for the Sooners?
Does he call his offensive line the joint cheeks of staff?
Yeah, he does. He absolutely does.
I had one good one. If you're not familiar with what we're talking about, OU signed what feels like their seventh transfer quarterback of this offseason, General Booty, who we still have beef with the Booty family, but that's neither here nor there, signed with the OU Sooners out of a junior college in Texas, actually, to be, I don't know, maybe the third guy, maybe the first guy. Who knows what they have in that quarterback room? Apparently, they still need the depth, but we're not here to talk about those dirty dirt burglars and their quarterbacks. We're here to talk about Texas having a bye week heading into the Big 12 baseball tournament. A lot happened, though, on campus, track, rowing. It was a championship weekend, golden weekend on the 40 acres. A lot of conference titles came home to roost. We're doing one show this week because, well, Kyle and I have life stuff going on. So we'll do the Burn Orange Lenses and the Godzillatron today as well. And then we'll see you back next Tuesday. So Texas had the midweek beatdown of Texas Southern last week to open up that five-game homestand to kind of close out the season. Just an absolute, like, bruising, and, you know, you're playing against a team that's far less talented, so you expect that to happen. Thankfully, Texas took care of business. So
while hurting their RPI in the process, Gerald.
There may be some merit to canceling these midweek games because OU is currently just getting, at the time of recording, it is 17-0 at the hands of the Wichita State Shockers. Very shocking outcome there. Maybe there is something to canceling these midweek games. Texas has a chance to not get bit by this. This week, they're taking on Sam Houston State tomorrow, the day you're listening to this, and then a weekend series, air quotes weekend, to wrap up Kansas for the regular season.
Yeah, this is an interesting, right? So Kansas had the displeasure of playing TCU last weekend. TCU basically, they were following soccer rules where you win on away goals or total goals scored, runs scored or something in case of a tie, because they just absolutely, like, video game demolished KU this past weekend. They won 30-3 in a baseball game, as well as 15-6 in another. KU's not great. They're not going to help the old RPI either. I think they're like 154th. But Texas, if they're a team that wants to have a real postseason shot, and they're obviously rested, they need to win their four final games remaining. Like you mentioned, Sam Houston in the midweek, and then three over KU. It's a bit out of their hands on where they get seated for the Big 12 conference. Again, Tech with a sweep of that OU team that didn't do great in the midweek could jump TCU and probably both of them be hosting regionals. Oklahoma State, who got swept previously, plays Baylor. They should be all right there. OU, again, depending on what they can do with against Tech, and then Texas follows those four, so they could finish as high as possibly third, but I'm really not betting on a Baylor sweep. But, you know, you kind of got to root for Tech, I guess, to beat OU to jump up to that four spot. Either way, if they win all four games, and then they can do a little damage in Arlington for the Big 12 tournament, they still have an outside chance at hosting a regional. They're currently 18th in RPI. A strong finish and, like I said, a tournament run would do a lot to put that in perspective of the folks who make these decisions. You don't want to rely on being 16th and getting it just because, you know, it probably would make some voter with something in their craw feel good to bump Texas out of hosting a regional. But they're there or thereabouts. Just take care of business and let the chips fall where they may.
By virtue of beating West Virginia, last weekend, 2 weeks ago? They own the tiebreaker in conference play. So Texas, if they win the same number of games as West Virginia, will finish ahead of them. Again, there's a lot of chips that still have to fall here, but TCU is in a position where they're like, we're going to force Texas Tech to have to sweep this weekend in order to win the conference regular season outright. I think that was what they're out there to prove a point, because I think TCU owns the season series over Texas Tech. So there's a lot, again, the chips are still falling for the conference tournament, and there's still a lot of baseball left to be played. But you're absolutely right. Texas had a season that we'll just go ahead and call it. This is not where we thought the season would be. We thought we thought we would talk about, is Texas going to be a one seed? Is Texas going to be, you know, are they going to have to go on the road until Omaha? Like, those are the conversations we thought we'd be having. And so for Texas to, like, you know, they still have a shot at, you know, potentially even, you know, like you said, a three seed in conference. So there's still a lot to play for. And thankfully, Kansas is absolutely trash can water at baseball this year. But we've said that about the football team, and, you know, stranger things have happened. Somebody got an Applebee's NIL deal out of it. So Texas also has an opportunity to keep themselves ahead of Texas A&M in the RPI rankings you mentioned. I think Texas currently at 18, A&M at 19. The disrespect for the Aggies is real, and I love it.
Admittedly, that is some burnt orange bias. Like, Texas A&M, I don't like to praise them at anything, but they're a top 10 team.
Never.
They're a top 10 team right now. They've relatively proved it. They, you know, won their Super Bowl, as Texas Twitter like to say, on a Tuesday, and then they really just kind of woke up. And Texas, you know, as we know, if you mark from the Tanner Witt injury, has hit the ball well. But anyways, it is silly. A&M is the better team. I wouldn't mind seeing them again in the postseason, because I think there would be some vengeance wanted there. But either way, Texas just needs to focus on themselves and let all other variables fall away and just win the team directly across from them. And that's their best bet to good stuff in the postseason.
And that seems to be like the story for Texas. It's just like, do what you can, control what you can, and let's see where the chips fall. And that's been the story this year. That's been the story of Texas baseball this year. So like we said, they've got the weekend series against Kansas, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series that will help determine where Texas falls in line. Other series you want to keep your eye on this weekend: West Virginia hosting Kansas State. So that's when we want to keep our eyes on to see where that shakes out as well. And then obviously OU takes on Texas Tech this weekend, so that's going to be another one. Yeah, I guess, you know, having to cheer for those Dirt Burglars in Lubbock, and they're playing at home, so like, that could be advantageous, as we've seen all year. That Cracker Jack box there in the Plains is helpful for them as they play it. So we'll obviously keep you updated. We'll have Big 12 tournament seedings this time next week, and we'll obviously keep up with all of the goings and comings of the conference tournament. Speaking of conference tournaments and conference winners, let's give some shine to all of the championships that Texas won this weekend, and we'll down the 40.
Gerald, I'm a little bit worried about the Texas power grid, the energy grid with the tower being so lit this month. That thing is never not bathed in orange because of these dang UT sports that keep winning at least conference championships. But we'll take it. All in all, keep adding to that tally. Total yearly, they're all good numbers, filling out every wing of the trophy room, not just swimming.
ERCOT's going to get mad at us for all of the light they're using in Austin. So let's start with the track. Number one men's and women's track and field sweeps the Big 12 outdoor title. That makes it a clean sweep of all four track titles this year, indoor and outdoor. Fifth time in school history that that has happened. The ladies won their third straight outdoor title, while the men won back-to-back. Coach Flo now with 11 in 4 years at the helm for the Longhorns.
No, it's really incredible what Coach Flo has done. He has turned a track program that was good, but had some peers and maybe people just kind of consistently better than them, even in conference, to a team that has its sights on national hardware. And I think that's pretty amazing what he's done all across. And if you look at these winners, it's you know, he's a jumping legend, but it's sprints, it's field events, it's distance events, you know, it's what I call distance events, 400. It's a good mix of all the way across. And there's a couple of people we have to call out who are just absolutely sensational. And I mean, again, talking about the sprints, you start with the fact that they swept the 100, 200, and 400, both in men's and women's. That's a pretty good day.
It's absolutely a great day to be a Longhorn. On the ladies' side, Julian Alfred recorded the third best time in collegiate history in the 100. That also broke Charlotte Gray's 31-year program record. She won the final with a 10-8. It was a win aided, so that didn't necessarily hit the book. Kennedy Flanell later set a meet record, beating her Texas record in the 200. The women swept the 400. Stacey Ann Williams got her title again. Kennedy Simon was second, and Rasadat Adeleke was third. She was there, won her, running her first outdoor 400 of the season. A solid record, one for one. One outdoor run, one medal. Jonathan Jones, the man, the myth, the legend, added to his legacy, winning the 400 meter on the men's side, setting a school record and becoming the first Longhorn to win that event since 2014.
Yeah, Jones is incredible. Improved his program record into the sixth fastest times in program history. I don't want to miss on Kai Harris, who I think was the top points getter for at least the men's side in this tournament. Won the 100 and actually pulled off the double with the 200. Wind aided in the 100, 993, just blistering, but became the first Longhorn to win the 100 since Jamal Charles in 2006. He completed the sweep in the 200 with a 19.72, again win aided, but marking the first time a Longhorn has ever won the 100 and 200 sprints at the Big 12 championship. The last time that UT actually swept the two big sprint events was 1977 at the Southwest Conference Championship, when one Johnny Lamb Jones, a Longhorn legend who has a myth about his track runs, but in 77, long time since they've gotten the big two there on the men's side.
We could go on and on, so let's just hit some names. Tripp Papiri won his ninth Big 12 championship. Christine Blazeveka won her second consecutive heptathlon, breaking into the 6,000-point club with her personal best. Riley Fitz became the fourth Longhorn to win the women's javelin. Haftoo Knight became the first ever Longhorn to win the men's 10,000, which, again, too many meters. Too many meters. Yusuf Bismiana won the 800 for the men. Again, too many meters there. Both Isabel Hebner and Yassine Abdallah were runners-up in the 5,000 meters. And Sean Statinova was the runner-up in the men's discus with a personal best throw there. Just a lot of too many meters, Kyle. It's just way too many meters.
Well, and my favorite event in track, the not too many meters, because you break 400 up by four, that's about the right distance for me. The women's 4x1, just men's, women's, I love the 4x1. It's a true sprint relay of Julian Alfred, Rasadat Adeleke, Davis, and Kennedy Flanell. Won, but also beat their own Texas record. 42.35 is the fifth fastest time in collegiate history. So just some blazing times getting ready for nationals. This is a team that looks primed to keep the tower lit, maybe bring home like they did in the indoors. At least one, if not, why not? make it two national championships on the track.
Keeping it championship, number one, rowing, won its seventh consecutive Big 12 championship, sweeping every single stinking race they rode, I guess would be the way to say it, winning the 11th Big 12 title in program history, getting themselves an automatic berth to the NCAA championship like that was ever in doubt.
This is actually the first time in program history after that that they received all 25 of the first place votes to be unanimous number one. So it's kind of a foregone conclusion that we think this team is just so stinking good, and they are, but they are truly rowing at unparalleled heights right now. Six members of the number one rowing varsity first eight earned all conference honors, including a three-timer in our girl, friend of the podcast, Gerald, your favorite name to pronounce, Aspa Christodoulidis, as we all say. I actually nailed that. Got their third, Caitlin Nifton and Francesca Raggi, and Cox and Rachel Rain all got their second. Lisa, I believe you pronounced this Gutfleisch, which I love, and Anna Jensen got their first all conference honors.
I'd have gone with a long. I'd have gone with Gutfleisch, but that's just me.
Ooh, that's good. I like Gutfleisch.
The NCAA championships are coming up in just a couple of weeks, May 27th in Sarasota, Florida. Texas should hopefully get some points for the Director's Cup there. Speaking of the chase for a back-to-back Director's Cup finish, Texas women's tennis will do no worse than tied for ninth place in the NCAA women's tournament after advancing to the Elite Eight with a win over number 14 Auburn 4-1.
They'll actually do no worse than tied for fifth place because they if you're in the Elite Eight, the four go on, you tie at the this is subtle accounting. My good friend Eric Verbit, noted accountant, he knows how to make the books look right. So this is the good stuff.
Brett is shaking his head. He talked us through this, and I still screwed it up.
Well, here's what I'll tell you. We're probably focusing on number two Peyton Stearns just dominating as she does. She's now 25-1 on the season, but also pretty much everyone won through in the singles, including a good friend of the podcast, Sabina Zainalova, getting the clincher. So just really good showing for them to head into the Elite Eight, and they look to be peaking at the right time, as we've said.
Nothing wrong with getting hot at the right time. They're advancing to take on number five, Virginia, a tough matchup in Champaign, Illinois this weekend. The semifinals will be on Saturday. Championship match, presumably if Texas goes that far, will be on Sunday. All held in Champaign. Sorry, Rick. Flights are expensive out there. But Texas's 12th appearance as a program in the Elite Eight. Number 12 men's tennis unfortunately falls to number 5 Michigan 4-2 in the round of 16. It was a close one, but Michigan just had the edge this weekend.
Yeah, this is the one, Gerald, where they I guess would be tied for ninth here. They had some really good play. They won the number 1 doubles, which was ranked over number 9 team over the number 24 team, lost the second, and then lost the doubles point on a tiebreaker. A lot of tiebreakers in this one. In fact, Michigan won all 4 of them. Steve Harper and Richard Ciamara each got wins. Micah Braswell, who was back for his first time since early April, was playing in the number 2 slot, just didn't look quite himself yet, was beaten by a lower-ranked opponent. That's unfortunate. PYB, our boy, Pierre, was up big, actually, when he and Elliot Spazieri, who were both the last two Longhorns playing, got an hour lightning delay and then had to finish indoors. And unfortunately for our guy Pierre, he was up big. Then an hour delay and moving indoors immediately went down big, went down 5-0 after match play resume, and that was where Michigan ultimately clinched. It's a tough one, right? Like a lot of tiebreakers, being forced when it's a close match to move indoors and then having it go the other team's way. Just at the time when it clinched, Spazieri was in his second tiebreaker, so an unbelievably tight one on the other court. They could have presumably won both of those and moved on. So really tough, heartbreaking way to go out. But a lot of fight for the Texas team against a good Michigan team.
Texas finishes the season with an 18-11 record. 82% of their losses this year came to teams ranked in the top six. All of them were the top 15 teams. So this is actually the eighth straight year that Texas has at least 18 wins. Now there's that asterisk of the COVID year. But they finished tied, again, ninth for Director's Cup purposes. So let's update that spreadsheet, Brett. We'd love to see the numbers there. Number 13, women's golf advances to the NCAA championship. The 30th time in school history, the sixth consecutive for them. Finish as the runners-up in the Albuquerque Regional with all five Texas players advancing in the top 25 individually.
No team had ever recorded a final score below par at that Albuquerque Regional. We talked about it on last week's podcast, just the altitude.
Tough course.
The way putts go, yeah, and they had a little home field advantage. I don't know if Oregon did too, because Oregon set the all-time record shooting 4-under. Texas shot 1-under, which again would have been the all-time record. In fact, Georgia, who took third, shot a 2-over par, which was the record for a weekend at this course in the regional round. So three really great scores, and unfortunately Texas got second, but fortunately the top four advanced, so Texas moves on. Championships begin Friday, May 20th at the Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale.
Keeping it on the links, number six men's golf currently sits fifth after the opening round of the Norman Regional. Travis Vick is pacing the team with a 5-under 67, tied for third in the individual rankings. Cole Hamer at 1-under, Parker Cootie even, Gnome even, and Pearson Cootie at 1-over.
Yeah, and in this one, I think there's 13 teams in it. The low five actually get, so they just need to sit where they are. I think they'll improve on this one, but sit where they are at the least, and they'll be moving on. But this one has some, there's some tough players in the Norman Regional, obviously number one Oklahoma, but number 18, number 24, number 25, 36, 37, 48, and 50. So Texas, they have a little work cut out for them, but I think they're going to be all right. A streak of 14 consecutive NCAA championship appearances dating back to 2008, the longest active in the NCAA.
This team has a shot to do it. And then finally, number 15 softball finishes third in the Big 12 championship. They run rule Texas Tech 9-1 after five innings, flipping the double bird and falling to Oklahoma State 6-1 in that one.
You know, I didn't actually see it live. I caught it on social media and then tuned into the game and went back and took a look. And Coach White, I mean, there was one review which was okay, that gave OSU their first run, and then another review in the same inning 30 seconds after with Texas up to bat, basically made, you know, they flipped everything, put OSU back out there, gave them a second run, both runs coming off reviews, and he just flipped his lid. And I kind of get it. I think in both cases they were probably the right call, but I get why, as a coach, that's infuriating when you're in, you know, a conference game in Oklahoma. It's already hard enough to win those, you know, against a really good Oklahoma State team. But that Oklahoma State team actually went on to win the tournament. They beat OU, giving them their second loss of the season. And I was thinking about that OU actually, you know, after Texas stopped their streak at 40 games, it was 38 during the season, but 40 games is the third longest ever. They had an 11 game win streak after the loss to Texas, so it would have been 52 games would have broken the longest streak ever in general at 47 games, and they would have finished the regular season as the first ever team to finish undefeated. So Texas really got to be the fly in the ointment to OU. And so even if they don't do anything super incredible in this run, I hope they do, in the postseason, they at the very least spoiled OU's chance to be truly a legendary team across all sports and have an undefeated regular season. And then just for good measure, Oklahoma State also didn't allow them even to be conference champions. So if ever there was a time to tag team with Oklahoma State, this is a good one.
So Texas is going to travel to Seattle for the NCAA regionals, taking on Weber State, Lehigh, and the number 13 national seed Washington, who's hosting that regional. A little bit potentially controversial, maybe, that Texas isn't hosting.
Yeah, the players actually look shocked. I think Coach White, again, man's having a weekend, just like stared at the TV screen, because now whenever they announce these, you know, it's on TV, and he was like just staring in the distance, trying not to throw any more birds or anything else. But a lot of, you could see players tried to clap and be excited. But they were 14 in RPI, top 16 in every poll. I think, you know, there was some early season struggles, obviously, and some struggle against the highest end competition that ultimately probably led to this. But the silver lining, if you can find it, is that the winner, if they were able to get past number 13, Washington, and the rest of the field, I think Weber State is a conference champion of their own, right? They would go play the number 4 Arkansas region winner. Again, if you assume worst case scenario that that's number 13 and then number 4 Arkansas, that still seems better than being a host and then immediately playing OU, who's probably going to be very upset that they didn't win their conference title with one of the best teams in history. So you have a better chance of getting further in the tournament without having to play a very angry OU team in the second round. Yes, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that they dominate their opening regional. But so if there's any silver lining, it's that the 16 seed would have had to go immediately against OU, and so maybe you miss them for a little while and hope for some more miracles. But yeah, we'll see. Go be the underdogs. Go on the road. Everyone loves a little Seattle. 40 degrees cooler than it is in Texas right now.
Might be nice to have a fun weekend in the Pacific Northwest.
All right, Gerald, let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. And I think this week we have to start with a question. Have you ever eaten Raisin Cane's in the passenger seat of a Lamborghini?
I was getting ready to say yes, and then you said that last part. No, I have not.
Of course, I'm talking about when Jordan Addison coming to visit the 40 acres, hanging out with his guy Bijan, and also the Minister of Culture and all levels of dignitaries around Austin. He was pictured at his hotel window with a plate of Cane's, which again, sharp eagle-eyed users noted is a sponsor of Bijan Robinson, and he was seen later with our beloved number 5. So hard to say if it was Jameson or I'm kidding, so I think, Gerald, what do you make of all of this, right? A weekend with the reigning Biletnikoff winner, which is the award for the top wide receiver in the country, a chance to get presumably the number 1 player, you know, in the portal. What do you think?
You know, he didn't necessarily get this kind of treatment coming out of high school, so I don't like necessarily blame him for wanting to enjoy the process as much as he can, especially because maybe this will drive up the NIL deals a little bit for him. Lamborghini Austin did follow him on multiple social media platforms, if you're that kind of person. But this is going to sound weird, and I'll probably, people will be in the comments saying things about this, but like, Jordan Addison would be a massive addition to Texas. And I think Texas, especially, you know, it's going to be like a million degrees when they play Bama, so like, you're going to need as many bodies as you can. But if there's one that Texas can like afford to lose, for lack of a better term, it's at the wide receiver spot, because they've already added Isaiah Neyor. They've already added Ajayi Hall. They've already added Jaleel Billingsley at tight end, who's kind of playing that mixed pass catcher. Jordan Whittington should, hopefully, fingers crossed, be healthy. Then you obviously have Xavier Worthy. You've got Brandon Thompson, who ran, what, a 10-2, I think, over the weekend to win state champion. He would have won multiple, like, not just 3A, but he would have won 4A as well. He was that fast. There are options in the wide receiver room. You got Troy Omiri. We still don't know what he's going to be. He should be healthy. So, like, I would love to have Jordan Addison. The more horses, the better. We've said it. Sark said it. We need as many sports cars in the garage as we can get. But I'm not going to, like, cry a river if he doesn't come to Texas.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Like, if we get him, it's an embarrassment of riches, and it's interesting to get him, now running back and then probably receiver as our deepest position group, right? So it's, you never get mad at that, right? You take the Ravens are the best team at drafting because they take the best guy on the board. So take the best guy on the board. I agree. There are positions that, you know, you would love to see people come in and instantly be a significant upgrade. And I'm not saying anything about Addison not being that. He's very, very, very good. Works obviously incredibly well with Brennan Marion. That is Texas's probably biggest in. And not to mention, you know, Sark just has a reputation. The guys want to play in his offense. So nonetheless, just an interesting thing to keep an eye on, decision coming. But there's still some Bama looms heavy. Lincoln Riley, and you know, maybe offering a wing or two of his house that USC gave him. Hopefully not the brisket wing. You know, it looms as well. So interesting. A lot more to come on this one, Gerald. Something that I don't think I've ever seen or even heard great white tall fishtails about. Missed this one last week, but wanted to get it in the notes this week. Parker Cootie, in his post-Big 12 championship, pre-national tournament, just squeezed in another round of golf for the U.S. Open local qualifier, and he got not one, but two holes in one in a single round. Gerald, where do you rank a hole in one on your sports, like, hardest things to achieve? 50 points in basketball? No. It is 70 points in basketball, hole in one, four touchdown game. Like, where do you put it on your list?
Kyle, since I have not successfully gotten a hole in 12 in my adult life, a hole in one just seems like it doesn't exist. Like, it's one of those like achievements that I'm like, is that even a real thing? Like, is that something that real people do? Like, obviously it happens, but like, even like the PGA pros, and obviously the tour courses are difficult, but like, the professional golfers don't hit aces often. It's not a regular occurrence. And so I don't know where it would rank, but like, I do not imagine in my wildest dreams. Like, I feel like I'm more likely to dunk a basketball in my lifetime at 5'9" than I am to hit a hole in one.
Fair enough. I hope you're really working on those calves for either achievement. But all right, there was some other news to hit. In volleyball, a new face on the 40 acres, but a name that some might recognize. Defensive specialist Keanelie Akana transfers from Nebraska. A big boost for a back row that already added the All-American libero Zoe Fleck this offseason. She's the fifth transfer addition for volleyball this year. But again, they lost a lot. Four transfers out. Two seniors moving on to greener, more adult pastures, and All-American setter Jenna Gabriel deciding to retire from volleyball and focus on mental health. So a lot of change for Coach Jared Elliott's team, and another really good one.
70% of her NCAA record 10 postseason aces from a year ago came against Texas in that upset win. And so if you can't beat them, make them join you, right? It's the reverse Kevin Durant. If you can't beat them, just sign them to your team and eliminate that op. But again, Texas needed some defensive help. They needed somebody to, like you said, sub in for Jenna Gabriel, whose name will come up. And then also, come to find out, you might hear more of that last name in the coming weeks and months, but not necessarily on the volleyball court.
That's right. She is the sister of 2023, according to Mike Roach, priority 2023 edge, Tassilia Khanna, who's the number three edge player in the nation in the 23 class out of Leahy, Utah. So, you know, never hurts with a little cross sport recruiting, you know, get the whole family on campus. Saves on flights, you know, just head to Austin. Gerald, I thought when you were saying, I thought you were making a volleyball pun when you were saying the opposite of Kevin Durant. I thought you were saying because she's a defensive specialist, she was going to get low. That's a joke about Kevin Durant and substance. Anyway, Jilly Shimkin called up for the U.S. U-20 Costa Rica friendlies. They basically, she was an alternate in the U-20 World or CONCACAF Cup, and they called her up for this one. So really exciting to see more Longhorns representing their country. And speaking of Longhorns representing their country, they did get a win. I meant to give this update on Twitter, but they got a win in their opening 3-on-3 basketball trial. There were 16 teams invited. Texas, because of their success, had a few there, a couple coaches, four players, and actually five, because one of the non-collegiate teams featured Joanne Allen Taylor. So they were hanging out even though she was on a different team. But in the 3-on-3 USA basketball, and this is basically the trial ground for the national team, Texas had a good showing, beating North Carolina in the first round, and hanging tough in their second round. But you know, who knows? Maybe we'll see Rory Harmon lighting it up in the 3-on-3 Olympic team. Gerald, I keeping it basketball. We saw the final landing spot of Trey Mitchell, formerly half a season at UT. it kind of sat out second half of the season from the team after transferring from UMass. So we will be seeing more Trey Mitchell, and I just assume Bob Huggins will get him real motivated to score like 26 against Texas next year. And speaking of scoring a lot against Texas next year, no, I hope our defense...
Awkward transition?
I hope our defense does incredibly well against reigning Heisman winner Alabama cornerback Bryce Young. But the Bama game was officially announced on Fox. We've speculated for a while that would be the case, and what that likely means, especially because there's very likely to be a Major League Baseball playoff game that day, is that that will be the big noon Saturday game. So it does mean you get Gus Johnson. That's your plus. Any negatives spring to mind?
I'm going to call him friend of the podcast because he follows us, but former Texas defensive standout Cedric Reed said that cleats melt on the turf when it's that hot, that they will likely have to change their cleats at halftime because it's so hot. Average temperature in Austin first or second weekend of September, 92 degrees. Been on turf in 90 degree heat. It is just absolutely miserable. So, but on the plus side, we'll get it out of the way quickly.
I liked both your tweet and the replies to it, that the upside is you don't have to worry all day because it's early, and also you can, if you win, you have all day to be petty on Twitter. And someone said in the response, if they win, they'll have till 7 p.m. to wake up from being blackout. I hope everyone celebrates a win. I hope it's a really good game. We'll see what happens. It will be a good one to be at, no matter the temperature, but stay hydrated out there, folks. Maybe bring some bucket hats, some cooling towels, everything you can, because I was at that Louisiana game last year. That was the hottest place on earth. Final one for Bruno Orange Lenses, the AT&T Byron Nelson concluded a very sad finish for hometown kid Jordan Spieth. He had a great 5-under on the final round to be 25-under for the weekend, but K.H. Lee had a 9-under in the fourth round, came soaring to steal it by one stroke from poor Jordan Spieth. He still got like millions of dollars. But the notable thing was an absolutely atrocious showing for Scottie Scheffler, tied for 15th. Just what is the guy doing not winning tournaments? I'm kidding. Of course, you can't win everything, but it was cool when I was looking him up that I noticed just a couple spots down, another Longhorn in the top 20. Friend of the podcast, former Texas Cowboy Bo Hostler, also finished in the top 20. So hook him all over at the AT&T Byron Nelson. Gerald, let's keep it rolling. What are you watching on your giant screen? Time for a little Godzillatron.
Didn't do a ton of watching this week. The weather is getting, like, it's getting hot in everywhere, but it was in the 90s this weekend in Oklahoma. And my son just wanted to be outside. And so he's 5 and he's just old enough to start helping me mow the lawn. And it's just free labor. Come on, Jesus.
You're winning the dad awards, man. I'm loving it. So I didn't watch a ton. I kind of updated the shows I've updated last week. So I was going to ask, Gerald, would you consider yourself a completionist when it comes to TV shows or sagas? I kind of feel I am as well. What's your like bar for how bad it has to be before you won't like force yourself to finish something?
So when you get that low, you start to hate watch just to see what it is. Sure. So like I'm fine with it being good or bad. Don't be like just nothing. Don't be a 5 out of 10. Mm. Like just be something. Like we watched Once Upon a Time, which was so bad it was good, right? Like it was just terrible.
Fair enough.
Like melodrama with Disney characters, but not really Disney characters. Like that was bad, and we watched it because it was dumb, and we can make fun of it, right? But like if you're middle of the road, I don't want to see you. Get out of here.
Yeah, I absolutely identify with that. I find myself in a weird place where I am obviously a completionist. I like to just finish the thing I started, go through. But I also get this weird pang. I noticed it again this week with Better Call Saul. I just didn't want to put it on because I only have like 5 episodes left. And I don't want to be done. Like I don't. There's something about when you really enjoy something and it's good and you're like, oh man, it's going to be done. And if I want to start over, I really got to invest again and start over. And I don't know when exactly that will be because I'm not the world's biggest rewatcher. So I find myself always in that weird zone of I'm a for sure completionist, but not necessarily a rewatcher. So there is that angst when you get to the end.
It's tough. Like it is. I just finished a book series that I have the same feeling. I'm like, what do I do now? Like, do I want to, I don't want to read all 6 of these books again, but like also like What do I do? Like, it's been a decade. I've been reading these books. I don't know what to do.
Fair enough. Fair enough. The same amount of time that George R. R. Martin has been working on the next chapter of his next book. But anyways,
he's got pages, Kyle. He's got pages.
I'm sure that folks are feeling the same way with this podcast, Gerald, as this has been wonderful in there.
Let's wrap it up then. Kyle, Bang the Drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. What are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, I think I am going to bang the drum on speed. There were a lot of Longhorns represented. I mean, if you're not following Danny Davis on Twitter, there's a lot of folks. Mike Roach was at the state track meet updating. Coach Zychek was there giving me live text of Texas commits and potential commits, what they were looking like and how they were running and how they looked up close, and multiple of the Statesman folks covering it. But the Texas State high school state track meet was going on, and there was a lot of Longhorns, a lot of Longhorn track commits. There was a couple of races where state 1, 2, 3 were all UT commits. There was some distance runner, the first school gold medal the track commits. So I love seeing all of those. There's one name that everyone kind of got locked on because you combine things that we all like, right? Like Ricky Bobby, we love going fast, and we love Texas football, even if it doesn't love us back. But the commits who are Texas football commits are always the most probably sought at these events. And one person who absolutely did not disappoint and also inspired my favorite Statesman tweet teaser in a long time when they said Cedric Golden did the thing that no runner could do all weekend. He caught up with Brennan Thompson, which is just good dad journalism. But Brennan Thompson is fast, like lightning fast. Like win the 100 in, as Gerald mentioned, like 3A, 4A, 5A, 6A speed fast, 10-2 fast. Win the 100 with dudes on the curve before you in a race that only has one curve. He's lightning fast. And it got me thinking, you know, I have a good buddy who is married to a wonderful woman who, if you squint, looks a bit like the woman he dated in college. And that's just fine. I'll use no names here. Another buddy who I not once but twice almost mistakenly called his new girlfriend his ex-girlfriend's name because I didn't realize they had broken up and he got the same version. It's okay to have a type. That is perfectly okay. And Sark's got a type. He likes them fast. He likes them tall. You know, it's great. Short. That's okay. You know, good hands, hopefully, is a part of the type. But he likes them fast. And as we talked about that receiver room and a potential additions and just all the things, we've talked about this many times in the podcast, but it's always fun just to reiterate. I would like, Gerald, for us to figure out a way to work our magic on SID John Bianco, and sponsor the Longhorn Republic barefoot on the grass 100-yard race between Texas football players, brought to you by Longhorn Republic and the Burnt Orange Nation. I feel like this would be a hit. I feel like you could stream this on the Longhorn Network. I feel like people would tune in because I believe in one of his town halls, Del Conte mentioned who the fastest guys on campus would be, and mentioned Brennan Thompson as well, but some of the guys on campus. And yes, that was great for them, but also there was about six different players who tweeted out Cap because they instantly assumed they are that guy. And I just love it. I love it that is even a thing we could talk about. But how much would you love the foot race? And it has to be old school. You got to do it barefoot on the grass, and you gotta race. Line them up on the one goal line, run to the other.
So I'm banging the drum this week on a little bit of a different rhythm. We mentioned earlier, Jenna Gabriel announced back in January that she was leaving the volleyball team to focus on her mental health. You know, she had an extra year of eligibility due to COVID, but she decided not to just because of the toll that being a student athlete was taking on her. She released this last week, kind of a 5-minute video of her reading a letter that she wrote, kind of explaining her journey and what she was going through. And she talked about taking advantage of the mental health services on campus that are available, behavioral health services that are available to athletes on campus, and just the stigma that's around those things. And she mentioned in there that, like, I was worried that people were going to think I was weak, and I was worried that people were going to think less of me. I'm a leader on the team. I'm a vocal leader. What if they knew? What if they knew? And as somebody who has been through two stints of therapy and counseling, I just want to say, like, that there's nothing further from the truth. And to be completely honest with you, if you think less of me because of that, I think less of you because you think less of me. I am a better husband, a better father, a better man, all of those things because of the work that I've done. I'm a better person because of the work that I've done through that. And we focus so much on the physical health, and there have been such crazy conversations about Ben Simmons in the NBA and his mental health. And I even go back to, like, Ricky Williams, who was very much struggling with mental health, and we tagged him with the C word, crazy. We called him crazy. We talked about Ron Artest and called him crazy. Dude very clearly had mental health issues. And the list goes on and on and on and on of athletes that we've dubbed crazy or something's wrong, or they don't love the game enough, because we forget that they're just regular freaking people that have stuff. They go through stuff. We're all going through stuff. And honestly, if you haven't had some weird mental health issues over the last 2 to 3-ish years, I'm worried about you. A lot of heavy stuff has happened. It's okay to not be okay. It's just not okay to stay that way. Whatever you got to do, get some help, because I am glad you're here. Kyle is glad you're here. We are glad you're here. The world is better to have you in it. Get the help that you need. We love you. We care about you.
And we love you not because you're a Longhorn fan or a Longhorn player. We love you because everyone deserves to be loved and to be loved for who they are exactly. And you don't have to change it. You don't have to change that to be anyone, warts and all. We love you guys and gals and everyone who listens to this podcast, your friends. We say friends of the pod, and we mean it. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for being you.
That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Corbin. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week, and until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. OU fans will now be known as the Booty Brigade.